Welcome to Inspiring Stories for Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Hello, my name is Tim McMillan. Welcome to another episode of Inspiring Stories brought to you by Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. We've all recently watched the Olympics and particularly in the first week watched in awe as some of those supremely gifted and dedicated and committed athletes did all sorts of superhuman things on all sorts of different gymnastics discipline. And I'm sure as we sit down and watch it every two or four years at the Commonwealth and Olympic Games, our mind turns to what sort of focus, what sort of dedication goes into getting yourself as an athlete to the point where you can do all those incredible things that us mere mortals could only dream of. My guest in this episode of Inspiring Stories is Australia's most decorated gymnast. She's a proud West Australian. She's been to multiple Olympic Games. She's a world champion in the floor exercise and also in one Commonwealth Games managed to pick up 4 gold medals, which is just a phenomenal effort. So it's with great pleasure I say hello and welcome to Lauren Mitchell. Hello, Lauren.
Hi. How are you? Good. How are you?
Going well, thank you. Olympics just been and gone.
Yep.
You are a recently retired Olympian, if I can put it that way.
Yeah, 5 years. That's recent.
that's close enough. As a spectator, this is probably your first big sort of sit down, I'm just going to watch it.
Yeah.
Olympics?
Yeah.
How did you find it?
Oh, look. If I'm being completely honest, I got the feels again watching floor finals. I was like, oh, I could still do that. I could come back. My routines would still be competitive. But honestly, watching everything else, I was like, oh, they're amazing. And I can't believe that I used to be able to do that at one point in my life.
Seriously, though, I mean, how quickly do you lose that conditioning once you're out of that intensive environment? I mean, look, you seem like you're still extremely fit.
Yeah, so I still go to the gym
and stuff. Could you still do that much of that stuff, do you reckon? Or would you hurt yourself?
I think I've lost like the plyometric, really quick, fast twitch muscle fibres that you need for gymnastics. Like the slow, heavy, say like weightlifting or I don't know, like those sorts of muscles I still have and that's still fine. But it's the quick aerodynamic, knowing where you are in space, like all those sorts of little things you just lose, and I'm definitely not as flexible as I was. I can still touch my toes, so that's good.
I'm sure you've still got the rest of us covered well and truly. Reflecting, though, on, you know, your long career as an elite-level gymnast and to now, the transition from one to the other, was it fairly easy and straightforward? Have you managed to sort of slip into what you might call normal life?
Kind of, yeah. I was kind of saying before, I needed to remove myself completely from gymnastics when I first retired. Otherwise, I'd want to go back to it. So I retired in 2016. Even watching the Commonwealth Games in 2018, I went over and actually watched it on the Gold Coast. And it made me want to get back into it again. I was working full time at this point. And I was like, oh, I can work part time. I only need to train beam and floor. The Olympics is coming up in another couple of years. I should be able to make it. And then I actually stopped. I was like, no, that's a bad idea. You're retired for a reason. But in terms of like actually retiring when I did, I was quite fortunate in that I had a really good support network around me. And when I first initially retired, I made sure that I had uni behind me and I was studying the entire time and everything like that. So it was quite seamless in that regard. But I obviously still missed it. It is like a gaping big hole because I was training for 18 years or whatever.
Do you still know many of the Australian girls who competed this year in Tokyo?
So Tyson, Georgia and Emily, I used to kind of train with them. They obviously train over East, but whenever we had training camps and stuff, we used to train together. So they were obviously a little bit younger than me.
But I have to ask, one of the great sort of, let's say out of arena stories from the Olympics was the great American gymnast Simone Biles and the questions of mental health and her struggles.
Yep.
What did you make of that? I mean, you would have met her many times over the years. Yeah? What did you make of that whole drama that played out?
I think it was too much drama for what it was worth, if I'm being completely honest.
Like, was that something just the media turned into something?
I think when she first came out, she said it was mental health issues.
Yeah.
But it wasn't mental health issues. She had something, what she coined as the twisties. So it's basically when you jump up in the middle of the air and you get lost and you have no idea where you are in space. Yep. So it's actually quite dangerous because she's performing like amazing skills. Like, for example, she has 3 vaults, which a handful of athletes in the world compete, and she competes all 3 of them. which, you know, me being an average vaulter or whatever, I wouldn't even dream of doing half the stuff that she's doing. And she's doing three of them, and she was getting confused in the air, which makes it even more dangerous than if, say, like an average person was getting confused in the air. And if you don't know where you are in space, the likelihood of landing on your head or landing in a compromising or awkward position increases the risk of you hurting yourself. And that's basically what she kind of came out and said after the fact, that she said it was mental health issues. Yeah. And whether or not the pressure and stuff kind of caused her to have those things, we don't know. But I think it was a really smart decision for her to go, no, I'm done. Like, I need to take a step back here and let my teammates do the work.
How much of executing those tasks is, you know, between the ears? I mean, you can train and you get the strength and the flexibility and the poise and all of that. But in the moment, how much of the battle is between the ears?
A lot. I think they say it's like 70% to 30% or something like that. So 30% is the actual physical work and doing that, and then 70% is the mental side of it. So once physically you've got all the skills down and you've been doing your routines over and over and over, it's literally about trying to switch your mind off and trying to let your body actually do the work. And I think her mind was not letting her body do the work. And so there was just that disconnect, and she just couldn't kind of get over it. And it's something that takes time as well. So I was just in awe that she was able to compete beam as well and then still win a bronze medal, I think it was. Which is, amazing.
She's a pretty amazing athlete. But let's talk about you. why did you want to be a gymnast? Obviously, it's something that you you grabbed hold of at a pretty young age. But what made you want to throw yourself into this sport?
Well, I had a gym bus party when I was younger. So when I was, I think my six-year-old birthday party, my parents got me a gym bus party. So it's basically like a double-decker bus. They take all the inside seats out and then replace it with gymnastics equipment. So I had that, and then that sparked my interest.
So prior to that?
I had no gymnastics. You
were just another active kid.
Yeah.
You'd like to climb onto things and bounce around.
I did like dancing and stuff when I was younger. Before gymnastics. Did like music. I'm definitely not a musician. So mum was like, do you want gymnastics or music? I was like, gymnastics, please.
Is six quite old?
People start at like two or four or you know, a bit younger than that. But I think if I started any younger, then I probably wouldn't have gone as far as what I was. Because when I got into it, literally it was just for fun. And I loved the sport, and I loved the feeling of being in control and flying and like all those kind of generic cliche things. But it wasn't until the 2007 World Championships. I made beam finals, and I was the only one in the team to make an individual apparatus final. And I was second up, and then I was actually watching the rest of the girls on beam because there's eight people in a finals. And I was like, wow, I'm one of the top eight on an apparatus in the world. I was like, I'm actually kind of good at this sport. Maybe I should give it a bit more of a go.
You've just glossed over. You've just gone from gym bus.
Yeah.
To world championships.
Yeah. There was a couple of years in between.
Lots of kids get onto gym buses at school or at, you know, birthday parties in primary school, aren't it? Not many of them end up even going as a spectator to a world championship. So can you fill in some of the gaps in between there? So as a six-year-old, bouncing around in a gym bus, and you thought, hey, this is fun. Let's give this a crack. At some point you must have gone, all right, I need to actually give some of my time and my energy to doing this properly. Was that a gradual thing or?
It was a gradual thing. So I started off at Claremont PCYC, which is now no longer there. They build apartment blocks in there. So from there, like a talent scout from WAIS basically came and was like, yeah, we'll give you a trial at WAIS. So the WA Institute of Sport. And then it was like a 3-month trial, then a 6-month trial. They're like, yep, we'll accept you into the WAIS Flyers program, which is like the junior program. And basically I was never the best in the group. I was always one of the average ones, and I was just kind of like ticking along. And I'd watch the older girls and be like, oh my God, I'd never be able to do that. Like the skills that they're doing, like just a random, like a basic flip on beam, I was in awe of. And I was like, that is absolutely amazing. So I was kind of always ticking away just in the background, and the, you know, the girls that I was with in that same group were a little bit better. And then they kind of started dropping out when they got to high school, and I just kind of progressed. And I'm not one of those naturally gifted gymnasts. I had to work really hard.
So you
hard.
Say that.
Yeah, I say that.
Again, to anyone outside, though, I'm sure they'd beg to differ.
But I had to really work hard for all those skills that I got. And then once I got them, I generally used to keep them, where the more naturally talented gymnasts, they got skills quite easily, but then they could lose them just as easily as well. So I think in the end, it obviously worked in my favour, having to work a little bit harder at things like that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, made the world championship team. Well, went to nationals and everything like that.
Oh, you know, and then this happened and then, yeah. You know, I went to Barber for bread and went to a world titles. And
yeah.
I really want to ask you about that environment, though, that you're in, because I think, to people who sort of drift in and out of, you know, being gymnastics fans, which I'm sure is of some annoyance to gymnasts, that
yeah.
people just sort of tap into it every two or four years, and we're blown away by it. But, you know, for you guys, this is so many hours of so many days of your life that you work so hard and put yourself in harm's way of physical injury and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do this after a break, but I really want you to get you to describe what it is like being in an elite camp.
Training environment.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because it sounds intense.
It is intense.
And I'd love you to paint a picture for us.
Sure.
This is Inspiring Stories. Lauren Mitchell, Australia's most decorated gymnast, is our special guest. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. We are hearing the story of superstar gymnast Lauren Mitchell, who for the first time recently got to sit down as a spectator and watch the Olympics, and was no doubt casting her mind back to all of her incredible feats over her long and illustrious career. We're reflecting on some of those in this episode of Inspiring Stories. Lauren, your mum hails, or and some of your family, particularly mm-hmm. through your mum's side, goes to Eastern Europe. Should I read anything into that? It's a part of the world that we associate with, you know, outstanding gymnasts.
Yeah.
Has that got anything to do with your success, at least genetically, or just the, you know, I don't know, was it fates that you were pushed into this sport, or is there anything in that?
No, I don't think they pushed me completely into the sport. Like, honestly, mum used to ask me every single year, do you want to do this? Do you still love it? And I was like, yes, yes. But my grandfather grew up in the war.
Mm-hmm.
And so he kind of, we've got like Romanian, Ukrainian, bit of German and stuff kind of all in our blood. And then my grandmother is Greek. So we kind of got a mix. And on my other side, I'm English. So I would love to say it's definitely in my heritage and my genes and stuff like that. And I think it helps with the height, because I'm obviously quite short. And I have really flat feet, which really helps with beam, because it increases the surface area.
Yeah.
So
not falling off, that's a good start.
Exactly, yep. So I'd love to say it is part of all that kind of combination of things. So, and our family's quite sporty as well.
I was going to say, are there gymnasts in the family from generations before you?
No, I'm like kind of the first gymnast to come along. I think my grandfather maybe dabbled in it a little bit, but just like the kindy gym stuff on the side, not really anything elite or anything like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But mum and dad generally pretty active people.
Yeah, yeah. So mum played hockey. I think she may have been one below like the state title or state teams or whatever that is. Dad used to play like AFL and stuff. So,
yeah.
But yeah, generally pretty active.
Yeah. And growing up as a youngster, you know, outside of gymnastics, balls always flying around the house. You're always running around doing this and that.
Yep, yeah. Yeah.
Typical Australian family sporting story.
Yeah.
Yeah. We hear a lot about how full on gymnastics particularly is at junior level, and when you get drafted into an elite program.
Yeah.
Just how intense it is. Can you shine a light on just what that is like being in there? I mean, in terms of your commitments to it, when you're trying to balance primary school and high school.
Yeah.
How did you do it? What was an average day like?
So when you first start out, I was in year 3, I think, when I first started training in the mornings. So when you start out doing one morning session in a week, which is enough, and then you train 4 afternoon sessions.
So what was a morning? So when you did a morning session, what time would you?
6:45 to 8:45 if you're in primary school. And then as soon as you get
as a grade 3.
Yeah.
That's nice and early for mum and dad too.
Yeah. Honestly, as soon as I got my license, mum was like, off you go, you can drive yourself. so 6:45 to 8:45 in primary school. Then when you got to high school, it was 6:45 till 9:45.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously once you get to high school, I think it's around 12, you're training 5 days a week. Sorry, 5 mornings a week,
yep.
4 evenings a week, and then on a Saturday. So basically 34 hours a week.
That's a lot, isn't it?
In the gym. Yeah, that's not including if you have to do weight sessions, which that goes maybe an hour or two a week. Then you've got physio and massage and recovery sessions and everything that kind of like goes along with the whole intense program. And then sometimes you'd also have like nutrition sessions or skin fold sessions or anything like that. So it's a lot to pack into a week,
yeah.
as well as doing school and everything.
I'm doing the maths and trying to work out when you actually got to sleep and do normal things, go to school as well. How did you balance your
school life?
School life and having to do the work there.
Primary school was pretty easy.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say that easy. Like you basically made sure that – so Wednesday afternoons was our afternoon off, so just basically smashed out all my homework then, which was quite good. And then obviously learning everything and stuff, like it was fine in school. And you really learn how to be organized and have really good time management skills really early on.
I bet.
Yeah, and primary school obviously finishes – like the school finishes about 3 and you would only leave school at about 2:45 because you'd start training at 3:30. So that wasn't a huge issue. It was when you got to high school, your training obviously increased. So I didn't get to school until maybe 10:15 most days. I left at 3:00 most days. But the school that I went to Iona Presentation College, and they were really supportive. So you obviously have electives and stuff, basically starting from year 8. When I went to school, it was year 8. It was high school. And I basically chose not to do sport because I didn't have to do sport because I was doing enough sport.
That covered.
Yep. And then I only chose one elective, and then kind of in year 10 and 11 and 12, I had no electives and I basically just did what I had to do. And I used all those elective times and study times, which really helped because I was able to catch up on things that I missed and then catch up on homework and things. So,
just on the sport issue, I know obviously you didn't have time and, you know, you were – definitely getting your activity in for the week. But if you could have done another sport just for fun, just for the hell of it, what would you have done?
So I remember doing like netball and volleyball and stuff in primary school. And that was always quite fun, but I definitely don't have the height for volleyball.
I didn't want to say it. What are you, about 5 foot?
5'3".
5'3".
160 centimetres. Yes, probably like running or athletics or something like that would have been a bit more my forte. Hurdles, actually, because I'm good at jumping.
Yeah, of course. There you go.
Yeah.
Getting up off the ground, landing, you know,
perfect.
Elegantly.
Yeah. Or diving, actually.
That's
there
one of
you
your
go.
Yeah, diving?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like that. Now it's sounding like another niche Olympic sport. Would you say that you had a fairly abnormal childhood, though? I don't know if you could – I mean, have others said that too, where you've lived an abnormal
life? No one said abnormal.
Maybe that's not the right word, but it's not a typical – It's a non-standard.
It is a non-standard.
If I can put it that way.
Yeah.
Childhood.
Yeah.
It's definitely different to the norm,
It is, yeah. And mum – like I'm one of 4 children, the oldest one, and mum was quite – aware of the fact that I didn't have a normal childhood or whatever, but she'd always drag me to my other siblings' sporting events or we all did music, so music recitals and stuff like that, as well as them being dragged to my gymnastics competitions. So in that regard, we were all very even planed and I didn't get any special treatment in relation to them. And she was always pretty good making sure that we caught up like with my friends from school and stuff and made that extra time for me. When I could and when I wanted to. And it was difficult, obviously, going through high school because I went to an all-girls school and, you know, as girls grow up and you start going out with boys and start being a bit more social, that's usually when a lot of the gymnasts go, oh, actually, that's kind of what I want to do. I don't really want to do
gymnastics.
You don't
want to miss out.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to miss out.
And so how did you approach that?
Well, that was kind of around the time that I started traveling internationally. And I was like, well, if I did that, I wouldn't have these opportunities to travel internationally. And I still love the sport and I wanted to compete and I wanted to prove to myself or just to see what I was capable of and to see what I could do. And I'd much rather have done that because I've been to so many different countries and experienced so many different types of cultures. And
it was worth the sacrifice.
It was worth the sacrifice.
And,
you know, someone said to me once, it's not really a sacrifice, it's a choice. And I chose to do gymnastics and I chose to represent my country. I didn't sacrifice anything to do that. And those words kind of stuck with me because someone said that to me quite early on. And every now and then I just remind myself and be like, no, I'm actually choosing to do this because I want to be here.
Yeah.
Not I have to be here.
Yeah.
So
was it alienating at all from your your mates at school?
A little bit, yeah.
I mean, you were living a very different life to them, right?
Yeah. And I had like really one really good friend who was amazing, and we're still friends today, you know. I graduated from school about 12 years ago now, I think. And we're still really good friends. And she would always make the effort to kind of go out with me. We would always try and catch up and stuff outside of school. And I think because a lot of the gymnasts went to like the gymnastics school. So Churchlands was where the gym bus came from. Wasteland dropped all the
Well, it comes back to that gym bus, doesn't
it? Yeah. Oh, different gym bus. But yes. And I think because my parents were like, no, we don't want you going to the gymnastics school. We want you to go to a different school so you have a different social circle. Yeah. I think that really helped as well to kind of get a little bit more of a normal life.
A bit more balance in
your world. Yeah, a bit more balance. Make different types of friends, not just hang out with the same people all the time. Because honestly, the people that I trained with, I saw more than my parents or my family.
Well, yeah.
Because you just spend 6.5 hours a day in the gym.
Yeah.
So, you know. Mm. Mum definitely, and Dad definitely wanted me to get outside of that circle.
Yeah.
Just so I could have a little bit more normality.
Yeah. A good idea, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Just before we get to another break, I have to ask you about, you know, there's been a lot of recent controversy around the intensive gymnastics program.
Yeah.
Here in WA, and some of the coaching practices and methods and the conduct of some of the people that ran it. Have you been caught up in that at all, or are you steering clear of it? Can you reflect on your own experiences, on that issue particularly?
Yeah, look, I've steered pretty clear of it, if I'm being completely honest. I don't.
Can I ask, is that because you didn't really find yourself affected by it,
or you just
don't want to go there?
Experience.
Yeah.
You know, you obviously have your days where it's tougher than other days, and you start to question things and things like that. And there's obviously a few things that I don't agree with personally, but I've kept very clear of making any accusations or being involved in any, like they sent out like a survey or something recently. I've kind of kept clear of all that sort of thing. Just because I don't really have a lot to say. Like, I feel like I was treated as an elite athlete should be treated, not in any other way. Because it's quite difficult because you start when you're six. I started when I was six. And you're working with these coaches and basically they're not your parent. They're not your teacher. They're a coach and they're trying to get the best out of you as they can. And basically all the – while gymnastics is kind of in this – kind of slump, I guess, for lack of a better word. The Soviets broke up in like the 90s or whatever, and all those people then basically dispersed to the rest of the world. And all those practices came with them, which is why it's kind of like a systemic failure, I guess, for lack of a better reason. It's a systemic issue that needs to be changed, and it's the fundamentals behind it. So I don't think accusing any one particular program or any one particular person is right. Because it's the whole approach and everyone's approach to gymnastics and the coaching culture needs to be changed. And, I think by accusing one person, that's not going to change the culture. It needs to be the new coaches coming up to change the culture.
Yeah.
So,
well, I suppose
and I think people are now aware of it.
So. Yeah. And there's still a bit to play out on that, isn't there? So we'll see what comes of it. Let's take another break. After that, I haven't even really asked you about your incredible world title win in 2010, as well as your trips to multiple Olympic Games and Commonwealth Games as well. So plenty still to get through. In this episode of Inspiring Stories, gymnast Lauren Mitchell is our special guest. We'll be back with more right after this.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. Tim McMillan is my name. My special guest is gymnast Lauren Mitchell. We're going to talk about some of your most incredible achievements now, Lauren. You mentioned around 2007, was it? You were at your first sort of big world championships. What was that like, finally making it to the ultimate stage, Olympics aside, but world championships?
That was the ultimate at the time.
Exactly, yeah.
A very different experience. I had no idea what to expect. Like, I'd been to, obviously, our national championships and things like that, and I'd been to other international competitions. But just being on the world stage like that, and it was in Germany, in Stuttgart, and so they had like cowbells ringing and people screaming, and like it was all really loud. And in finals as well, it's the first time that I'd done. So you don't get a 30-second touch. So basically, you have the day to kind of go out on the apparatus and feel the apparatus. But you don't get to warm up on the apparatus that you're competing on right beforehand, where every other competition you do. So it was the first time I'd kind of experienced anything like that. And it was pretty incredible. And, you know, the pressure was there a little bit because at the World Championships before the Olympic Games the year before, you have to qualify a team. And at that time it was top 12 get to qualify, and we qualified 11th, which our hearts are in our mouth for about 2 days or something, while we're waiting for the results and everyone to come through. So not only did you feel kind of really awful for maybe not qualifying Australia, but you were kind of, on the other hand, really happy and really proud that I'd actually made a final, because I was the only one to make an individual apparatus final. Yeah, so it was kind of like a mixed bag of emotions. And then when I kind of all finished, I was like, oh, my goodness.
That just happened.
Yeah, literally. And then, like I said before, it was kind of the one time where I sat down and I actually watched, and I was like, wow, I'm actually good at this sport. Like, I could give this a red hot go.
It only just occurred to you at that moment, really?
Well, because I was always the average one coming up in the group. I was never, like, the most amazing person. Like, I was obviously good at beam and floor, but I didn't think I was that good at beam and floor. And then to make a finals, I was like, maybe I am good at beam and floor. So, yeah. And I think I'm, like, the only person to make a finals at every single World Championships or Olympic Games that I've been to, which is kind of cool.
We'll add it to your list. You need to update your Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
Tell me about being in that moment. I mean, all of the training and hours that we've just talked about, and then you've got that one chance to put it all on show, your very best effort.
Yeah.
Firstly, do you have a build-up, a plan? Do you have superstitions? Do you have things you do, pieces of music you listen to? Like, what's your pre-game routine?
Yeah, look, I don't know if you've ever watched me do YouTube. I always stand like in front of the beam or whatever, and I do this thing where I kind of feel like I push my feet into the ground.
Yeah.
And I basically go, okay, I'm feeling the ground underneath me. This is where I am in this moment. I'm not halfway through a beam routine. I'm not thinking about the training or whatever I've done beforehand. I'm in this moment. I'm feeling the floor. And then I do like little kind of movements and stuff to kind of get my head around what skills I'm doing and things like that. Then I'd present and then I'd just go. And my routine, I always had a certain rhythm to it, and certain breaths at certain times, and little cues all along the routine. Mentally that's kind of what helped me.
Yeah.
And then right like before the routine, when you're not up on the podium, when you're down kind of in the marshalling waiting area, I always kind of visualised everything, went through everything in my head, and I had to do it in a certain way, otherwise it wouldn't have worked. And I always had... you know those glucose jelly beans that you can get from the chemist?
I always had
two of those before my floor routine, and it had to be the pink one and the white one.
Well, there you go. These little super... the white ones.
So good.
They're the best.
Yeah.
Straight for the white ones.
Yeah. I always used to pick up the packet and make sure it had the most amount of pink and white in there. They need to sell just that.
Oh, I'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
If they sell bags of those glucose white jelly beans. So much trouble.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't be an elite level gymnast.
But well, that's why I was only for competitions.
Exactly. But you must, I mean, all of you must have had your own little quirky things that you did, right?
Yeah.
I mean, jelly beans maybe for you.
Yeah.
You must have seen some of your competitors doing all sorts of
wacky
things.
Yeah, some people only taped in a certain way. They could only wear like a certain amount of socks.
Yeah.
They had to wear like a short sleeve leotard to warm up and then put in their long sleeve leotard to compete, and all kind of different things like that.
Yeah.
So,
I suppose in isolation, when you look at them, they seem quite weird. But
if
you want to draw a line between them, it tells a story, I suppose, of
athletes
just the enormous pressure that you're under.
Yeah.
What's it like then when you're starting your routine, you're on the beam, you're on the floor, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Do you feel more relaxed then, or are you in some sort of weird, almost out of body experience in a different zone?
Yeah. So sometimes when you're completely in the zone,
yeah,
you kind of know you're in the zone, and you are kind of in an out of body experience. Like you. You just literally let your body do it because your body knows how to do it.
It's so much muscle memory in there.
Yeah. Yep. It's more about just switching your mind off and just letting your body go through the movements.
Yep.
But that's only if you're 100% completely prepared physically and mentally. If you're not, then it's a completely different experience because then you're stressing out and you're quite anxious and you don't know what's going to happen. And so your mind's kind of overthinking things, which is why the key is a really good preparation and making sure you've kind of accounted for every different type of situation. So my coach used to give me different little things to work on at training and stuff like that. So, for example, we'll do 5 beam routines in training. And she was like, okay, if you hit 3 beam routines so you don't fall off in 3, then you can finish. So you're like, oh, okay. Well, the pressure's on to not hit – sorry, to hit those 3 beam routines. And so if you fall off in one of the 3, then you're like, oh, okay. So then you're like, right, this 4th one has to count because then I don't have to do another one. And it's kind of like a little game with yourself. So not only are you practicing the physical side of things and getting fitter and stronger and stuff, you're also practicing the mental side of things to kind of give yourself, okay, that pressure, I need to make this routine, which is kind of the pressure that you get in competition anyway because you only get one – go at it. You only get one qualification go, where I know in swimming or running or, sorry, athletics or anything like that, you have your heats and then you have your semis and you have your finals. You literally have your one go to qualify and that qualifies you for everything. It qualifies you for team finals, all-round finals, apparatus finals.
It's brutal.
It's brutal.
And I think, again, as someone who just sort of dips in and out and watches it in awe every couple of years at Commonwealth Olympic Games, you know, you feel for someone who can do this impeccable routine and then, you know, comes to the landing and
something happens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, like they trip, fall or, you know, just don't stick the landing as well as they probably have done a million times in training.
And
you feel so bad for them.
To not make finals,
yeah, and that's it.
This Japanese guy, and I'm going to say his name wrong, it's Kohei Uchimura.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. He is phenomenal. He's basically the Simone Biles of the male gymnastics world. And he's Japanese. And Tokyo would have been his last Olympics because I think it was his 4th Olympics or something like that. I think he's a 7-time world champion, like phenomenal. And he wasn't in the Japanese team. He was selected just for high bar finals. And you watched his qualifying routine and he fell. And you know that the last 5 years has been a build up to that routine and the immense pressure that he'd put on himself, and he fell at a home finals, and I just felt so bad for the guy because you don't get a second chance.
No, like, that's it.
Yeah.
It's so brutal, so brutal. Let's go back to your first Olympic Games. You mentioned 2007 world champs. Yep. What was it like getting the call up for the Olympic Games and the whole experience? You know, when you get your Olympics track suit and all the gear, and you get your plane ticket. What's that like?
Oh, it's pretty phenomenal. So we went to Beijing and then they give you travel clothes that you travel in. So they know that you're part of the Australian team. Then you get there and then you go to like this giant warehouse basically. And you do fittings kind of like the January or whatever before because the Olympics was in August. And so they have basically all your sizes and stuff there. You can pick and choose a couple of different sizes if they don't fit. But everything's all there for you. And so you're walking out this giant warehouse with these 2 suitcases full of green and gold stuff and you're like, this is incredible because you've never seen so many green and gold stuff in your life.
Yeah.
And that's all you wear for the next 2-3 weeks. And I think that bit's amazing. And then the fact that you've got like this huge dining hall as well with all these different type of athletes because it's that and Commonwealth Games is the only time that you're basically with any other athletes. And even though you've never met any other Australian athletes before, or you may have met other Australian athletes before, you always say hi to them if they're wearing the green and gold because you just know that they're part of your team and they'll have your back no matter what. So that kind of side of it, like the camaraderie and the mateship and your teammates, that is what makes the Olympics the Olympics.
Yeah.
The competition's basically the same as every other competition. Like, I know that sounds like a cliche, but it is. It's everything else which makes the Olympics the Olympics.
Yeah.
So just having that feeling of support and everyone's there for you and to support you and to watch you and, that's kind of cool.
Mm.
Yeah.
Did Mum and Dad get to travel much and watch you compete?
Yeah, so Dad used to actually live in China for a couple of years. So he kind of had like the local knowledge and so they could get accommodation quite cheaply. And that was really cool that I got to see that first one. And Mum and Dad went to my first World Championships and then everyone went to 2012 London as well, and then Mum went to Glasgow Commonwealth Games. So I went to like a handful of competitions, which is kind of cool.
I suppose they'd be forever on a plane if they
were
following
exactly.
you
it's
everywhere.
Expensive.
In between the 08 and the 12 Olympics, you had arguably your greatest individual achievement.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't get much better than winning a world title.
Yeah.
in the floor exercise, as you reflect back on your career, was that the standout individual moment at least, winning that?
Yeah. Look, to be honest, there's a couple of standout moments. And I did a talk for a gymnastics club recently, and they put on like a reel, like someone had made a combination of all these different types of routines and stuff that I'd done over the years. And I was getting really emotional, and I was like, oh my goodness, why am I getting emotional just watching all of this come through? And I don't think when you're in the moment, you don't realize what it actually means.
Yeah.
And so looking back on it, and at one point in your life, you were the best in the world at something.
Yeah.
That was... is pretty
not many
incredible.
People can say that.
Yeah, and you know, now I've been retired 5 years, you can reflect back on it and you're like, that is actually amazing.
Yeah.
And there was this one other time, was in Japan. It was a World Cup final as well, and it was basically like all the finalists from the beam World Championships final had made this World Cup event, and they were all competing, and then I won that one, and I think that meant more as well because it was kind of like a redo of the beam finals from the World Championships of that year where I think I got fourth or something.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool as well.
Is there a feeling after having a massive victory like you had in 2010 that you don't want to be, for want of a better phrase, a one-hit wonder?
Yeah. You kind of want to prove that you deserve that and that was you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's still, even in London, because I got fifth in London by 0.1, which is literally a step.
Still burns.
Yeah, it still burns. I still think about it. I'm like, oh my God, I was so close. That's probably not the one regret because I did everything that I could have up until that point to make myself, you know, in the best possible position to win an Olympic medal. But it was just some things that just didn't fall in my favour.
Like,
for example, I was battling a shoulder injury and an abdominal injury at the same time during that routine. So, and there was nothing else I could do about it. Like, that's what it was. And
it's
just unfortunate. It was just
that's
sport.
Just how it played out. We need to take another break, but a little bit more on your Olympics journey after that. And you mentioned injuries as well, because I know you've had some sizable injuries that you've had to overcome in your career, which is probably not unexpected given the rigors that you put yourself through. But yeah, I'll get you to explain some of your more severe injuries that you've had to cope with. Because having read about some of them, you're like, that doesn't sound great.
No.
But the pressures, I suppose, you put on your body, it's going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're throwing ourselves up into the air and trying to land again, you know?
Exactly. This is Inspiring Stories. Lauren Mitchell is our special guest. Back with more right after this.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. We are hearing the incredible story of our most decorated gymnast this country has ever produced, WA's own Lauren Mitchell. Lauren, you mentioned just before the break there a shoulder injury, but let's talk about the catalogue of injuries over your career. We probably haven't got time to go through all of them.
Probably not.
But I know that there was a broken hand at one point,
which,
if my memory serves, was in the earlier part of your career.
Yeah.
You also had a spectacular knee injury at one point that kind of makes you cry just imagining the pain.
Yeah. Look, it's the only injury that I've done where I felt like I've needed to throw up. Every other injury, you're like, like, it hurts, but, you know, like, after I broke my hand, I drove home and I have a manual car and I was my left hand, so, and I've done my ankles multiple times and I tore my ab muscle right before London and that injury was really painful. And again, it made me feel sick, but not, like, instantaneous, make me want to throw up.
Yeah.
Where when I
body
did
in
knee,
shock, that sort of response.
Yeah.
So you snapped your ACL and your PCL.
Yeah.
In one hit.
Got to do it well.
You don't do things by halves.
No. So I had just a bad landing on floor. I landed with my feet apart a little bit, like in front and behind each other. And then my knee, I've got hyperextensive knees anyway, and my knee hyperextended out to the side. And I just heard this bang and I was like, oh, that's not good. Felt a little bit loose. Saw the doctor and I think it's Lockman's test that they do to test your ACL. She was like, oh, no, that's fine. But because you're going away to World Uni Games like tomorrow or the day after. We'll just get an MRI just to check. Anyway, got the MRI and ACL was completely
confirmed
gone.
Confirmed the worst.
And PCL was 75% gone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, unfortunately, not surgery a week after.
Yeah. And, of course, you at that point were gunning for the Rio Games.
Yeah. So,
did just calling it a day enter your mind at that point?
Because
I suppose in your span of your career, you're probably getting towards the senior end anyway, weren't you?
Yeah. Look, it was a really tough decision for me to make if I make a call there and then say, nah, that's it, I'm done. But I've always said I never wanted to finish on an injury. And I knew that if I didn't give it one last go that I would regret it. So I ended up getting the surgery, the ACL surgery with the Lars augmentation. Mm-hmm. So kind of they take your hamstring and then the rest of it is basically like a plastic graft.
Yeah.
It makes it heal quicker.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, within that time, there was the World Championships. And like I said before, Australia has to qualify a team for the Olympics and Australia didn't qualify a team and I wasn't competing, so I couldn't help them out. And they could only send one person. And we had our national championships. So I did my knee in the June. Then the following May, we had our national championships to make Rio. And look, I still won beam.
Yeah.
I surprised myself with that. but unfortunately, they didn't send me. And I can understand they don't want to send someone who's just straight off rehab. But if Australia had made a team, I would have been in the team.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the whole disappointing thing for me personally. And I just needed a little bit more time just to come back from it. And the Olympics would have been the perfect amount of time after nationals to get
and a beautiful swan song.
Yeah.
But it wasn't to be.
No. But I didn't finish on an injury, so that's okay.
Well, exactly. And how are you now, sort of as you've left the elite level sport behind?
Yeah.
Physically, are you okay? Are there any kind of lingering aches and pains from
my knees? Probably
from your time?
One of my better injuries. Because I rehabbed really, really well. Like I was really conscious of the rehab for that because I know that a lot of people don't and then they re-rupture their ACL and I was like, I do not want to go through this again.
Mm.
It's probably my shoulder that's actually the worst.
Yep.
So I tore the supraspinatus tendon by 85%. So they basically had to re-anchor that on. And I tore, you've got something called the labrum, which basically holds the ball and the socket on together. And I tore that off the socket bit. So it was kind of like free in the air. So they had to anchor that back on. And I think, it's just not been the same since.
It's not quite right.
Yeah, I don't need it a lot. Only
but all worth
work.
It. All worth it.
All worth it. 100% worth it. I wouldn't change anything.
What do you do with your days now? Post-gymnastics, what do you do?
Yeah, I'm a radiographer now at Royal Perth Hospital.
Yep.
So we see all the trauma come in because it's obviously we've got the state trauma unit there. And my injuries are nothing compared to some of those people or what they have to go through. So it makes my life go, okay, I was able to experience my gymnastics and able to represent my country and do exactly what I wanted while still getting these minor injuries compared to what some people have to go through. And it's just unfortunately a car accident, like wrong place, wrong time. It affects their life completely.
Yeah.
So,
pretty humbling to see people
in
those.
It is, yeah. And it makes you really appreciate what
moments.
You have. Yeah.
Yeah. Your knowledge and your connection to your physical body that you've obviously just developed an innate understanding of over many years.
Yeah.
Is that, can we draw a link between that and being a radiographer and dealing with people who are in their own moments dealing with physical trauma as
if
well?
I,
is there a link there?
Ever see someone do an ACL injury, I'm like, well, you need to make sure you do your rehab.
We'll have you back on the beam in no time.
No, it can really make you kind of appreciate and empathize and sympathize with them because you know, well, probably not how much pain they're going through, but you know what the rehab process is going to be like and you kind of know a little bit about what they're kind of going through and what they're feeling. So you can kind of see, you can see how being a radiographer helps them.
Yeah.
And you can see how my past experience helps when you're x-raying them or scanning them. And you can give them a little bit of your own advice.
From the elite level gymnastics program.
Yeah.
And that's
it's cool
advice that you're not going to get anywhere else.
Yeah, exactly, right?
And what does the future hold for you? What are your ambitions going forward? Do you see yourself being involved with gymnastics at a coaching level or a mentoring level or anything like that?
I would love to do some mentoring. Yeah, I think coaching's a little bit too hard and I have the radiography career now.
Yeah.
So I'm quite, like, I love radiography, so I'm quite focused on that in terms of my actual full-time job. I would definitely consider some mentoring. And me and Alana Slater, one of the other most successful gymnasts from WA, we did a little bit of mentoring before the WAIS program kind of wasn't the waste program anymore. Yep. And that kind of fell by the wayside, unfortunately. So maybe in another couple of years, once it kind of comes back and gymnastics comes back a little bit more within Australia, then hopefully we can use our skills. And because we've got so much knowledge that is just kind of going to waste that we can just pass on to the next generation.
Yeah. So. Haven't thought about buying an old gym bus and taking it to kids' birthday parties, inspiring the next generation.
No.
Imagine that, Lauren Mitchell's gym bus.
That would be cool.
There you go. You can have that one for free.
Thanks.
Do with it whatever you want. It sounds like you're onto a winner with your new career anyway. So, Lauren, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. Congratulations again, belatedly, on all of your amazing achievements and good luck with everything going forward. And we appreciate you coming in and sharing your story with us.
That's all right. Thanks for
having
me.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. You've been listening to another episode of Inspiring Stories here on 882 6BR. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. We look forward to you joining us next time as we unearth another inspiring story.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.